Good morning and welcome to the Daily Ding. Happy Tuesday morning. We have all of Monday's NBA action from the Orlando bubble at Walt Disney World Resort. I'm Jared Weiss. I'm joined by Dave Dufour. We've got Brian Smith hitting the bleep thorps. A reminder that you can get a one-year subscription to The Athletic for 40% off of the regular price by going to theathletic.com/dailyding and get all the best from our team of writers. That's just $2.99 a month in American cash. Also, be sure to use the comments section on the app and let us know how we're doing. If you want to pwn me, just tell me in the comments section. No problem. So coming up on today's show, the Nuggets silence the Thunder in overtime. The Raptors chill out the Heat. But first, we've got Zion versus Ja. It finally happened. The Pelicans, they beat the Grizzlies 109-99. Frankly, it wasn't even that close. But who cares what the score was? We got the two star rookies going at it, Dave.
Listen, we have waited a while for this. And, you know, in spite of Ja's incredible unanimous rookie of the year season, which he will be, he just didn't live up to the moment. 11 points, 8 assists, which is, you know, fine. 5 of 21 shooting, 1 of 10 from 3. Needless to say, extremely disappointing performance. My concern, and Jared, you know, correct me if you think I'm going on a tangent here because this is a young team, but they just played a back-to-back in the bubble. None of these guys are fully conditioned. I don't think that they're ready for the back-to-back, and it showed tonight. They shot horribly.
They did, and I mean, to Ja's credit, he was going balls to the wall there in crunch time, and I think part of the problem is this Memphis team doesn't have any other creators that you can really rely upon against a fourth quarter defense besides Ja Morant, which is why they're probably, you know, if they get the 8th seed, they're probably not going to beat the Lakers. I don't think that's going to work out for them. But hey, you know what? In a couple of years, they'll probably be really good. But yeah, it doesn't matter because the future was now in this game.
The Justice Winslow injury really hurt them.
That's true. They definitely could have used a creator out there like him for sure. Maybe they should have played John Conchar. You know what? We can live with regret. But thank God that we had the matchup we wanted, which was Zion versus Ja. And not only did we get that just in the game in general, but Zion, he played 25 minutes. He went out early. And he's been doing this so far is they play him and then he has to watch crunch time. And he said after the game on Monday that that was really killing him. And he finally got to come back out there playing crunch time. And he literally took over the game. And we had him and Ja trying to jump over the rim on every single possession there in crunch time. And while Morant was throwing up a lot of reckless finger rolls that didn't go in, missed a couple threes, you had Zion just kind of Blake Griffin-ing every single time, just flying into the paint, bobbing and weaving through people, jumping sideways with both elbows out, the ball gripped over his head, and just fighting through contact and finishing. And this was the prototype Zion that we've been wanting to see so far.
Exactly. And while he certainly doesn't appear to be in game shape and the defense is just horrific, you see where he makes the impact on the offensive end without plays even being called for him. There was an incredible play where after a made basket by the Grizzlies, the ball's inbounded to Lonzo. Well, Zion saw that the defense wasn't there, took off. Lonzo throws an incredible three-quarter court alley-oop lob to Zion, which, of course, you know, he dunks all over Anthony Tolliver's head. And those sort of plays, those heads-up plays in particular, when you're playing with Lonzo Ball, who's just the king of the hit-ahead pass, just opens up so much for New Orleans, where if their half-court offense just isn't generating stuff, you know that Zion's going to find a way to get you some buckets.
Yeah, I mean, Lonzo had some huge full-court passes ahead. He made so many great plays there. That Zion alley-oop, I can't remember if it was that exact one, but I couldn't believe it. He caught the ball and then continued to elevate after catching the ball. I don't feel like I've never seen that happen before. The guy, he defies physics, which is incredible because he weighed 500 pounds and he waddles across the floor. But the play that really stood out at the end to me was they gave him a clear out play pretty much like to decide the game. And he attacks from the corner. And how often do you see a guy in isolation clear out attack from the corner and he just bulldozed through Valanciunas to get to the rim? And that was the special one that really kind of showed how he's at this different level.
Yeah, and I don't want to overlook Brandon Ingram and what he did in this game. 24 points. I mean, he was just incredibly steady the entire game. When they need a bucket, he gets it. He had some really nice plays tonight. Made a couple passes that make me think Brandon Ingram starting to see the court a little bit differently. And maybe this is something that's developed toward the end of the first part of the regular season pre-hiatus, and then in the intervening months, you know, maybe he's been doing film study and just picking up on stuff like that. But I think his playmaking growth has been huge. But big for the Pelicans is that I thought, especially in crunch time, when they were playing together, was the first time that Ingram and Zion sort of seemed like they were moving synergistically rather than working against each other.
Yeah, and I mean, a little bit of that was some turn-taking. Like, Ingram had that huge left corner jumper from 20 feet that was a big shot. It was a little bit of that, but at least they weren't crossing paths and getting in each other's way. And maybe that's the future for this New Orleans team, is having them play each side of the floor and kind of flow into the seams or around the edges.
Yeah. Jaren Jackson, pretty good, 22 points.
And he made it rain. He was raining down in this one. He ended up going 2 for 8, but I love the quick trigger that he's playing with right now. You know, Jaren Jackson is such an enigma. He's a 7-footer that gets like 2 or 3 rebounds a night just by nature of the role that he's playing on this team. But he was just so aggressive for them and was a big reason why they actually were sticking in this game for a little while. I guess as the president of the Jaren Jackson fan club, are you satisfied with where he's at this point in the bubble?
No, I think offensively, everyone has to be pretty happy. He's on pace statistically to be one of the best shooting big men in NBA history. So that's great. But the thing that he kind of hung his hat on coming into the league was this amazing defensive feel, and it's just not there yet. He fouls too much. He had 5 fouls tonight in 32 minutes. I mean, this has been an issue for him. The guy averages about 6 per 36. So, you know, good luck playing a full game with him. The 2 rebounds and 1 defensive rebound is just inexcusable. And part of that certainly is the way that they use him. They're not scared to have him guarding on the perimeter. And then, you know, the offensive rebounds on the other end, he's shooting 30-foot threes, so he's not going to get a lot of those. But the defensive rebounding in particular, it's like he's allergic to balls that have come off the rim. And that has got to improve for him to be taken seriously at all, in particular because his defense just isn't there. You know, he needs to be in the game, so he's got to fix the fouling, and he needs to get rebounds and affect the play on defense. Otherwise, he's just going to be, you know, a tall gunner.
All right, let's get to some news and seeding updates. Coach of the Year is in, sort of. The NBA's Coaches Association, they announced their winners, and it was a tie between Milwaukee's Mike Budenholzer and Oklahoma City's Billy Donovan. But Nick Nurse was one vote shy of making it a 3-way tie, which has never happened before. Dave, should it have been a 3-way tie?
I guess it depends. We probably could have a 5-way tie or a 6-way tie. There were a lot of really impressive coaching performances this year. I mean, Nate McMillan, the Pacers were on a 50-win pace without their best player all season. Pretty incredible. Look at what Brad Stevens is doing with the defense without a center or a good point of attack point guard defender in his starting lineup. I mean, that's pretty incredible. Obviously, Nick Nurse looking like he could take Toronto to back-to-back finals. That's a big deal, especially after losing Kawhi. But it's hard to argue against Mike Budenholzer and what he's done in Milwaukee this season, especially on the heels of what they did last year. So this is a continuation, which to me is a degree of difficulty higher than just outperforming low expectations, which is what Billy Donovan did, and he did it well. I do think it's harder when your team is expected to, you know, win 65 games. It's hard to keep everyone involved, and especially when you're beating them the way that the Bucks do, to do that and then outperform expectations. This team, you know, very late in the season was on a 70-win pace. Pretty impressive. So I think they got this right, but it's hard to go wrong with any of those guys. It was some very impressive coaching this year.
For sure. They weren't just a one seed. They're an all-time great team statistically this year, and they don't even play their best players in the fourth quarter half the time. So well deserved there. Other guys that got votes: Taylor Jenkins from Memphis, Nate McMillan, Eric Spoelstra of the Heat, Bradley Stevens, and of course Frank Vogel from the Lakers. But let's move on to the seeding here. So the Sixers, they beat the Spurs in a thriller that included a Shake Milton game-winning three with about 7 seconds left, and then Tobias Harris stuffing Jakob Poeltl at the rim to win the game in the final seconds. So that means that the Spurs have now fallen back into a tie with the Blazers ahead of them in the 9 seed. And the Blazers have an extra game in hand here, so they really control their destiny as far as the seeding is set up right now. And then Memphis, they lost their 3rd game in a row. So Memphis is now only 2 games up on San Antonio and Portland with 5 games remaining. And then the Pelicans sit half a game behind those 2 teams there. So Memphis could have a perilous fall ahead of them if they don't turn things around. The Wizards, they're done. They lost 111 to 100 to the Indiana Pacers. So the Pacers are now in the 5 seed. Miami's in the 4 seed. Philly's in the 6 seed. All those teams are separated by one game between all of them. Houston is in the 4 seed still. Utah falls half a game behind them in the 5 seed. And OKC is in the 6 seed. All right, let's head back down to Florida, where the Raptors beat the Heat 107 to 103. Let's start at the end here, because the Heat kind of ran two, or really three-ish same actions in a row at the end here, trying to get somebody flying down the left slot. Goran Dragic, he hit a finger roll with about 45 seconds left. Then Kyle Lowry, he got a tip to make a big play to force a turnover with about 20 seconds left. And then the final play, they basically do the same thing again with Jimmy Buckets working out of the post, trying to slip it to a cutter, cutting right below him, and obviously Toronto broke that up. Dave, what was Eric Spoelstra thinking at the end there?
Well, I think it's a case of playing a little coy, to be honest with you. There's a chance these two teams are going to see each other in the playoffs, and neither of these coaches want to give up too much. So I think with Spo, for a game that doesn't really mean a ton to the Heat, of course, you want to play your best and you want to win, but I don't think it's worth it to give up some of your crunch time go-to plays. So this was a little bit of a simple action, as you mentioned. Jimmy Butler posting up, point guard cutting. It was very easy for Fred VanVleet to just sit on that and poke it away. I mean, he had a huge game, and this was just another part of that.
And he had 36 points, 8 for 16 shooting, 7 for 12 from deep. This is in 42 minutes, by the way, in a seeding game. Between VanVleet and Kyle Lowry, they went 22 for 22 from the free throw line. Almost screwed the math up there. I love this Raptors team. What team gives you two tiny point guards that get to the line that much that isn't, I guess, Russell Westbrook, basically?
Yeah, Freddie Velvet had a big game, man. 36 points. And he showed again why you can't leave him open. You know, there's a lot of people that think about that Raptors-Bucks series from last year in the playoffs and this outlier shooting performance from Fred VanVleet. Well, the guy just knocks down open shots. You can't lose him. And the Heat, uncharacteristically, lost him a few times tonight. I mean, 7 of 12. Some of these were heat check threes. I mean, he was walking into some pretty deep shots. And he's going to be a free agent this offseason, too. And these types of games from him are going to stand out, especially when teams like the Knicks take a peek at him. And then Kyle Lowry, I mean, the guy just wins. It's what he does.
Yeah. And I mean, the foul trouble is what really did Miami in here. And just the free throw disparity. It's 36 free throws for Toronto, 16 for Miami here. It just wasn't even close. Although, hey, shout out to Miami getting up 45 three-pointers. They really leaned into it. It was another good game for Kelly Olynyk, who he had 4 threes. He had 17 points in total. But there was a really interesting moment in the middle of the fourth quarter where Kyle Lowry gets a rebound and Kelly Olynyk swipes at the ball and hits Lowry in the face. And they called it a flagrant one. And the Raptors, they got the two free throws there off the flagrant. And then they get the ball back. They run a play. Serge Ibaka drives the lane like he's Triple J out there. I couldn't believe how smooth he looked handling the ball there. Very uncharacteristic for him. But so that turned into what was essentially a four-point play and gave Raptors control of the game. But the interesting thing is we had a rare mea culpa by an official on the record afterwards. Ref David Guthrie said on the record to a pool reporter after the game that he was wrong to call it a flagrant, and that after doing review post game that he felt that it was actually a natural basketball play. So will all the people on my mentions actually finally shut up, Dave?
I mean, it's the first time Kelly Olynyk was called for a flagrant that wasn't. The ref, history is on the side of the referee there. You mentioned Kelly Olynyk. He's going to have to be big for them if they're going to have a good run in the playoffs. This was a good game, needed to get going. You know, he needs to be a guy who can play with and without Bam Adebayo, and they need him for that. He was effective in the pick and roll. I mean, him and Jimmy Butler actually have pretty good chemistry. You know, for guys that haven't been together that long, pretty impressed with it.
And just a quick thing to note, I was surprised Derrick Jones Jr. not playing at all against Pascal Siakam. I thought he was going to get a lot of run in this game, but he played 16 seconds.
Yeah, it's a little interesting. I think seeing Iguodala out there a little bit was probably a priority, but it was a little weird that he didn't play much, but he didn't play much in their last game either, so maybe there's something going on there. I do think we should talk about Goran Dragic. He has so far outperformed Kendrick Nunn to the degree where I'm not sure how you can play Nunn over Dragic. I understand that Spo probably likes having that calming influence coming off the bench, a guy you can know can create his own shot and create shots for other people. Like, that's huge, especially when Jimmy Butler's sitting. But I think they got to find a way to play Jimmy and Goran together more and not just in crunch time, because they may be able to avoid clutch situations by just, you know, having bigger leads because they play their best players.
I completely agree. I think it's a big thing just that, like, Spo's job every night is that he's got this rotation of like four or five wings that he's trying to find who are the guys shooting that night. And so he just needs Dragic to come off the bench because he needs to have that guy that he knows can carry the second unit offense. But you know what? When the rotation tightens up in the playoffs, Goran should be playing 33, 35 minutes a night. He should be out there as much as possible. The Nuggets, they beat the Thunder 121 to 113 in overtime. We had another thrilling ending in this game. Jamal Murray's not out there. Gary Harris is not out there. Will Barton's not out there. So let's go to Monte Morris. Dave DeFore, take it away.
End of regulation. I mean, they were going back and forth. Gallinari hits some free throws, puts the Thunder up one. And then the Nuggets come down with a chance to run a play, and they're trying to run it for Michael Porter, who has just been hot the entire game. I mean, he had 20 points in the first half, ends with 37, but he was just so hot. You want to feed the hot hand for this. Play gets broken up a little bit. Porter gets hung up underneath. Monte Morris recognizes it as it happens up top, gets into a little two-man game with Jokic, and Jokic is just, you know, he's a beautiful person to play with. He just seems like it's so much fun to be with a guy that's going to find you when you're open. Monte Morris, a super smart cutter, takes a nice cut through the lane. Jokic finds him with a pocket pass. Morris gets fouled going for the layup, hits both free throws, puts Denver up one. And then we go to the other end, and Chris Paul does Chris Paul things, Jared.
Oh, it was a grift. It was a hell of a grift. He drives at Paul Millsap out on the elbow. He catches a little bit of contact with Millsap, but sells it really hard while also grabbing Millsap's waistbands, by the way, just to really sell it. I don't even know what that does, but it does something clearly. Of course, he gets the call. They're in the bonus. He goes to the line, and how perfect was it that he missed the free throw? That was so poetic.
Uncharacteristic for Chris Paul, too. And by the way, he was just killing in this game. I mean, he was just insane. He had 23 points. There was a point where he was just taking a couple of mid-rangers, and it just felt like he was going to eat all day long. So for him to miss a free throw in a clutch situation, I was shocked.
And especially because he had that classic kind of snaking through the lane shot where he put up this double pumper kind of like 5 feet from the rim and it just went out. If that went in, that would have been probably the game winner for them. So CP got a little unlucky here, but that got us overtime and that got us the best of Jokic, who immediately goes to work down on the left block, a couple great moves along the baseline. And then he has the crap Dirk shot. What do you call this shot that Jokic has where he just kind of like pounds a dribble into the ground and then just kind of falls to the side, puts up a rainbow, and it falls through. It's the ugliest shot in the NBA, but it is so majestic. He hits that shot. He ends up with 8 points in overtime. I mean, when you look at the way that Jokic is playing down the stretch in this, does this make you think that Denver has a legitimate chance at winning it?
I mean, Jokic is a tier one player to me. That means I think he can be the best player on a championship team. But do they have the other guys? By the way, that shot is called the Sombor Shuffle. That's Jokic signature move. I think he's the best center in the NBA, hands down. And I think he can be the best player on a championship team. But as you noted off the top, no Jamal Murray, no Will Barton, no Gary Harris. And to be honest, missing along with Gary Harris now is Gary Harris's jump shot's been gone all year. So, you know, I don't know if this team necessarily can do it. They certainly have the talent when it's all assembled, healthy and ready to go, and depending on which Jamal Murray you get. But they have the bodies to do it, and they have the guy to lead them there, as we saw in overtime. I mean, this is just what those guys do. And he just said, listen, Michael Porter, you've had a great game, but I'm going to take care of this. And he did. So, yeah, I think the Nuggets could win a championship. I just think it's unlikely given how erratic the health has been for this roster.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, Jokic, he had a 30-point triple-double in this game, and maybe they don't get there this year, but they've got a guy that could get them there, and that's MPJ. Like you said, 37 points, 12 for 16 from the field, 9 for 9 from the line, and he had 12 rebounds on top of that. And he played 44 minutes. This is a guy that was a redshirt a year ago, eased in, really load managed this year. And now we've got him playing 44 minutes heading into his first playoff experience with a team that like just could maybe be the dark horse. And I mean, we've talked about this a lot before. I thought MPJ had major Durant vibes coming out of high school, and we're not even really seeing that part of his game yet. He's just such a remarkable athlete and such a remarkable body that he's already finding incredible ways to score at the NBA level.
Yeah, and he's got a great jump shot, super smooth, super easy, but he's a multi-level scorer. He's a really smart cutter. He actually uses his own passes to set up his cuts. He's actually really gifted at that. And obviously the shooting, I mean, he hit a pull-up three in full transition in this game and just scored in every single way you possibly can. 9 for 9 from the line, had 12 rebounds, which is big because he's actually a really good rebounder. And Mike Malone had been disappointed with him in the bubble and just didn't think he was doing a good enough job rebounding. Grabs 12 boards in this game. And I think that he's a ceiling raiser for them. If this is the Michael Porter Jr. they're going to get, that's a big deal. And clearly, he's not going to play 44 minutes. He's not going to have the usage that he had in this game and put up 16 shots. But if he can give you 9 shots off the bench, it's probably going to be about 18 points given his efficiency. So that's a huge upgrade for them.
Well, he's going to raise their ceiling. I'm going to raise the roof because that's going to do it for today's show. So don't forget about the other basketball shows across the Athletic Podcast Network. We still have your favorite shows like the Athletic NBA Show, No Dunks, Tampering, and House of Strauss, plus over a dozen team-specific shows available from some of your favorite Athletic beat writers. So don't forget to follow on the app to get notifications for new episodes and utilize the podcast episode comment section. And hey, tell Dave his beard looks great. Write whatever you got to write to make yourself happy. And if you're not a member of The Athletic, you're in luck because you can get all of our podcasts ad-free, plus some fantastic writing across all major sports, all for a super low price. Get a subscription today at theathletic.com/dailyding. You never know when these promos end, so you better get there soon. So thank you for waking up with us. Dave, let's go home.
Shout out to Mama Weiss. Ding, ding.